It's time now, though, for History Matters, taking a look back at this week in history. And for that, we are joined by the one and only Scott Washington, historian extraordinaire, no matter where you go. How are you?
Well, good, Aaron. And I can say the same about you. We could just toss back accolades back and forth.
But then we wouldn't be talking about history.
No, well, that's true.
It would
true.
Be equally fun for
that's
us,
right.
though.
That's right. You know, and yeah. it's so reassuring when you actually start looking at history that there aren't alternative facts. There are facts and there are accomplishments, and these are noteworthy. And especially this week, it's just interesting how there's sometimes, as I've said many times over in Hillsborough, a thin line between coincidence and synchronicity. Mm. And this week is no exception. This week,
what actually is the difference between coincidence and synchronicity?
Well, yes. Well, that's true. That is. That's right. Well, I'll just leave it to the listeners to make up their mind.
A real fine line between those two.
And random events. That's right.
There
exactly.
you go.
Yeah,
all right.
And meaningful kind of connections. There is something interesting. I mean, this week where there's a lot in the news about the Supreme Court and Justice Kavanaugh and what's happening there. And it just coincidentally, there are two interesting elements about Supreme Court justices mm-hmm. this week. 1967, October 2nd, is when Justice Thurgood Marshall, the first African-American Supreme Court justice, is sworn in to the state. In fact, he actually played a pivotal role in a number of cases he argued before mm-hmm. the court, including, of course, Brown versus Board of Education. Yep. He was nominated to the court by Lyndon Johnson and was certainly a trailblazer there. Another one, even going farther back, that actually has a local connection is on October 5th, 1751, mm-hmm. a young guy is born. Well, I guess they're always young if they're born.
They're young when they're born, yeah.
James Iredell. And James Iredell is a tremendous force in a great legal mind, becomes an early, very young Supreme Court justice. But in the Revolutionary War, he's the one who begins to argue that British law doesn't quite apply in the American circumstances. Mm-hmm. And actually, he is a connection locally right here in this area in Orange County in Hillsborough. He was at that 1788 Constitutional Convention.
Yes.
That proved so pivotal. In fact, actually, he led the opposition to both just adjourning the convention, saying we don't need to meet, and he argued passionately for it. But he also becomes the person who carries the idea that we need to be on record, that the Articles of Confederation were not enough, we needed something else. And even though the overwhelming odds were against him and the small minority that was advocating for this new constitution, he was at least able to wrestle it to a tie by his persuasiveness, mm-hmm. and they vote to postpone ratifying the Constitution, which changes history.
So what was his argument about British law not applying to the American colonies? What was the thing with that, do you know?
I don't know all the specifics, except in general, it had to do with how some of the elements of British law mm-hmm. were not, did not apply to American circumstances.
Okay.
Specifically, that the British officials that were coming up time and again mm-hmm. for corruption issues were that
kind of
would
illegitimately
be
in their positions.
That's right.
Kind of thing.
That's
okay.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha.
So
gotcha.
But more than that, it was because of the force of his reasoning, he realized, like others did, and that's why, you know, as we've talked before, in the British colonies, the people that were rising up were really raising reasonable questions mm-hmm. about how things were being organized, and certainly as the colonies grew, some of the ways that they were being organized were not working. And the voice of those people who had real questions were just not being heard. And I think that's the real issue. If you were to say, who's an American and who's for the British, it really wasn't like that. It was
right.
Some people were all British colonists. Some were the law and order. Let's trust the crown. They know what's best, even
yeah.
though it seems like out of favor. And those who were like, I'm a British subject, but this is not working. Mm-hmm. We need to do something different.
What's the difference between, it's like saying, well, are you an American or are you a North Carolinian? It's
right.
like, well, I'm both. And it's not until the revolution or that area that people start to see that there's a difference between the two.
I saw some paper money that came in for a contribution to the Orange County Historical Museum, and it had on it there the rising states. You know, it was, you know, at that time, this was during the Revolutionary War. It was like it was growing. This, and it took time. I mean, we've talked about the regulators, 1771, and everything happened there. It takes a few years for people to coalesce around this idea that maybe that's not just a matter of arguing the facts. Maybe we need to do something a little different.
Yep.
And we see that today.
Hint, wink, wink, nudge.
Well, I know. It's interesting. You're seeing the protesters who are out today exercising these rights that people fought for, that the people in Hillsborough, when all these delegates came from all over North Carolina and voted courageously to postpone ratifying the Constitution until these elements were dealt with and a Bill of Rights was added to the Constitution before a ratification would take place. That is extremely unusual, but that was very principled.
Absolutely.
And they were not in the kind of opposition. These people all work together. Sometimes they're called anti-federalists later on, but at the time, I would say these people had a healthy skepticism about a Constitution without those protections. What would it mean?
Yep.
And so we see all these dissidents today. I say America is the most anti-authoritarian country in the world. It really is.
Usually for better.
Usually for better. That's right. Now, I will say, having said that, now this is an interesting shift. Like, where do we go from here?
I was wondering where you were segueing out of this.
I'm going to tell you about nonviolence. We're talking about protesters. Okay. Here, October 2nd, 1869, Mahatma Gandhi is born.
All right.
And actually, the International Day of Nonviolence is observed on October 2nd, honor of that, which is kind of interesting. But, there's also a couple of other ones. Now, people may laugh, but on the same day, October 2nd...
People should laugh,
actually. Bud Abbott of Abbott and Costello is born in 1897. In 1890, Groucho Marx. Now, you may say, what do these have to do? And I say, I would make the case that humor is nonviolence, too. And
I mean, what is the most anti-war movie of all time? But Duck Soup, right?
Duck Soup. That's
right.
You can make
that argument.
Well, you can say MASH too.
MASH. Yeah. I mean, there are a lot of anti-war movies have come along afterwards. Apocalypse Now and all that.
Yes. But
Duck Soup sets the
satire is actually protected speech. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's remarkable.
Yeah.
Which is why these people say, how can these late night comedians say these things? They said it's because it's protected speech, especially satire.
Yep, absolutely.
So that's kind of an important thing. So as I say, these are the interesting nuggets of history that come out in a given week, and you know and I know that we've come here thinking, oh, we've heard it all, and then something pops up, we go, well, this is a little bit different. The Gregorian calendar. Now, that's the one we use today, but it wasn't adopted until 1752 in the British colonies. Mm-hmm. But here's the real thing. It starts in 1582.
With Pope Gregory,
right? That's right. It takes almost 300 years for it to finally be accepted.
Way back when the Pope had enough power to decide literally what day it was.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Yeah.
But not for Great Britain. They said, no, we're going to get... And that would just messed up the calendar. And when was New Year's? New Year's was originally in March.
Well, Great Britain, because it had already reformed, right? It was an Anglican church at that point, so it doesn't go along with the Pope when the Pope changes the calendar, and then it takes another 150 years.
Well, the calendars were all off. They couldn't decide when New Year's Day was, and it was getting to be really a problem in terms of planting seasons.
Britain shooting off fireworks and everyone else wondering why, what are you doing?
That's right. Over in Hillsborough, if you go to the Old Town Cemetery, in the far corner, you can actually visit the grave of one of the signers of the Declaration of Independence, William Hooper, and it has a date there, but it's been corrected because there was this confusion about when was he born, under the old calendar, new calendar. So it does become one of those issues that actually historians look at in terms of saying, well, which date are we talking about? Is it a Tuesday or was it a, 2 weeks later sort of thing?
Weird. That's the original Brexit.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, we're going to have this calendar.
Well,
now we're going to have other calendar.
No, that was the Brexit because they actually bought into, let's go along with the Gregorian calendar.
Right.
So
it took them 100 years to come around to it, though.
About 200, 300 years. Yeah, exactly.
The original, we're not going to go along with your your newfangled calendar,
that's right.
Pope Gregory.
Finally,
that's the original Brexit.
That's right, exactly. Okay, all there's right. a couple other interesting things. Now, it seems a little early to be thinking about Thanksgiving, but on October 3rd, 1863 is when President Lincoln, I guess looking ahead on his calendar, mm-hmm. declares the last Thursday in November to be a National Thanksgiving Day.
Yep.
And it continues to be that way.
In on the same day that George Washington declared Thanksgiving
yes.
Day initially.
Yes, which is really interesting. Like, why were these people thinking
that's one
so
of that,
early?
That's that fine line between coincidence and synchronicity, right?
Yes.
Like, is that just the one in 365 shot that it just so happened to be on the same day? Or did Lincoln make that proclamation because Washington had done it
on the
same day
again,
before?
Again, but why did Washington pick this day in October, early October, to declare the last Thursday in November as a day of
general Thanksgiving. You got to plan for it. You got to give the department stores ready to get to time to get ready for their big Thanksgiving weekend sales.
Well,
you know.
And let's be honest too, that it was also in 1789 when George Washington gave this, which is I think interesting because you know if we look at the date of where things were happening, we know that. By June, the preceding June, is when amendments get introduced.
Mm-hmm.
They get sent out at the end of September. So maybe at the beginning of October, George Washington is willing to say, yes, now we can breathe a sigh of relief.
Right,
I'm just wondering about the timing of this.
So a couple of fascinating things that I didn't know. First of all, when Washington declared this day was going to be Thanksgiving Day, it was because the Constitution had been adopted, and that's what we're giving thanks for. That I didn't know, because we do not connect Thanksgiving with the ratification of the Constitution at all.
Well, the Constitution, we're talking really about the amendments at this point.
Right.
Because the Constitution was in effect, but the amendments had been approved just that September 25th, 1789. So literally within only about 10 days. And you can't help but wonder about the coincidence. I've never seen the exact linkage, except that I look at this and I go, well, I don't think that was entirely coincidence.
It can't have been, right?
Yeah.
And the other thing is that when Washington declared Thanksgiving Day, that was the first national holiday as well. So before Christmas, before New Year's, before July 4th even.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, before a general cell phone alert saying that.
We're going to make that a national holiday. Skip right over making Election Day a holiday.
That's
first
right.
presidential alert day.
You know, wouldn't
observed.
It be nice?
It's going to be on a
wouldn't
Monday.
Wouldn't it be nice if
year.
There was a presidential alert saying it's a voting day? You know, wouldn't that be a nice thing to get on your phone saying, everybody?
I'm more concerned about what follows the it's a voting day.
True.
Let's just hold off on any emergency alerts at all.
I agree.
As much as humanly possible.
Totally
agree. But I mean, we've talked about how Christmas as being kind of the big celebration is recent. Like that's been maybe the last 100-ish years or so. And prior to that, Christmas was a day like any other day almost.
Pilgrims land and they begin building on December 25th. Yeah. It's not a big deal.
They banned Christmas.
I don't know if they banned.
No, they literally did. Like because the Pilgrims, the Puritans didn't holidays. So they banned celebrations and specifically targeted Christmas.
Again, because of that break between the Protestants and the Roman Catholic and they, let's throw out the baby with the bathwater.
Yep,
we're not celebrating anything like that speaks of that. But yeah, so we have Thanksgiving. It really becomes the first major kind of holiday, and how fitting in 1863 when President Lincoln declares this. And maybe it had been kind of haphazard. I'm not really sure. I haven't traced this enough, but certainly we find that he's in the midst of war, says, we need to do this. We need to give thanks, which is rather remarkable.
Yeah. And probably kind of a union rallying thing as
well.
I would imagine it's a like everything that happens between 1861 and early 1865 has some war strategy behind it on every side. Yeah.
Well, and certainly that idea that in 1863 the war is not over yet.
Right. We've hit the turning point.
Gettysburg has happened. There's devastating casualties, and so to stop and pause for a moment and to say we have so much to be grateful for. As a nation.
We've got Scott Washington here in the studio for History Matters. We've got time for one more.
Here's one here. 1899, the vacuum cleaner is invented. It's first patented. Now, I only bring this up because we all use vacuum cleaners in most places and or at some time or another. But at least
we should.
Yes. But I heard a fascinating thing about the Dyson, the fellow who invented his vacuum cleaner. Mm-hmm. And he had this, and of course it's bagless, and he was influenced by the Wizard of Oz and the Cyclone. And he said, what
really?
If we could create a Cyclone and do it that way? And, you know, he approached other companies, and they said, yeah, well, we have a lot tied up in the bags. So they didn't buy it, and he kept developing it. It took him as many times as we hear about Edison creating the light bulb. He kept going until he got the prototype right. And,
interesting.
And then they first marketed in Japan, and then he bought the rights back. It's still a private company, but there is something simple that we take for granted, and it's based on people saying, well, what if, or maybe we could do it differently, or how do we get the stuff off the floor without having to bend over?
And that is how history matters. Scott Washington, as always, thank you so much.
Thank you, Eric.